Hovland, aren't you?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's Midwest citizenship that you recite. What is Hovland citizenship?
He is also a resident.
He's also Illinois.
Does the record establish that he is a citizen of Illinois?
Yes, Your Honor.
And where does the record establish that? This is critical because the prevailing rule of law is that the citizenship of the receiver and not the citizenship of the thing in receivership matters for diversity.
Off the top of my head, I can't cite to you the specific provision.
Maybe it would be important for the parties to inform us where we can find the citizenship of the receiver, not just the residence, but citizenship of the receiver.
Certainly.
That means domicile. I'm also interested in the citizenship of the defendant. You treat Sandberg, Phoenix, and Von Gontard PC as if it were an ordinary corporation. But obviously it's not. And the whole nature of a professional corporation is one that lacks limited personal liability of the erstwhile partners. Why shouldn't it be treated as a partnership?
Well, we're entering into an area of law that I, quite frankly, don't express any expertise in.
Well, this is the kind of thing that had to be researched before the suit was filed, of course.
Sandberg Phoenix's principal place of business is in St. Louis, Missouri, however.
A partnership doesn't have principal places of business. It only has the citizenships of all partners. Now, if we were to treat it as a form of partnership, we need to know the citizenship of all partners. We have at least once treated a professional corporation as a corporation, although more recently we've expressed doubts about that decision's correctness in the intervening decisions of the Supreme Court. And perhaps we need to take a look at that here.
Well, certainly professional corporations in Illinois are required to be listed with the...
Illinois doesn't matter much. You treat this as a Missouri professional corporation.
Well, I'm expressing my... I don't know how Missouri licenses professional corporations.
Yeah, critical. If Missouri gives a professional corporation the same attributes as a normal corporation, including limited liability of all of the investors, so that, for example, each lawyer would be liable for his own torts, but not for the torts of his others in the firm, then I assume we would, without question, treat it as a real corporation. But if under Missouri law, every partner is liable for, is responsible for the liability of any partner or any member of the firm, then perhaps we need to treat it as a partnership, and then everybody's citizenship matters. So I don't know how we can get to first base without knowing what a PC is or does in Missouri.
I would defer to my counsel for the corporation to perhaps know more about
it. Suppose we brief the issue of jurisdiction in some day in the future. Would that satisfy Judge Easterbrook?
Certainly sounds by me if we can get the parties to address this in detail.
Certainly, I think the parties would be willing to address
it.
Thank you, Your Honor. This case has been long and litigious. It has encompassed numerous state appeals and federal appeals. The instant case comes before this court as a result of Sandberg Phoenix's admitted concurrent and conflicting representation of Midwest Transit and Hal Hicks, one of the stockholders of the corporation. I believe that the discussion...
But have you yet identified a source for the legal claims that you're making?
Well, I think the important thing here is not...
And the malpractice was not a success.
The important thing is not what this case is about, but what it's not
about. Well, wait a second. No, I don't get that. I think it's important what the case is about.
Well, it never got to be tried as the case that it is about. It is
okay,
about.
So what is it about?
It is about the fact that Sandberg Phoenix took Midwest Transit's money and didn't earn it. and Sanborn and Midwest Transit wants the money back.
So it's fraud, is that your argument, a conversion, or what?
Enrichment, what is it?
Quite frankly, it's a simple breach of contract case. I mean, when you contract...
What was the contract?
The contract is to represent your client to the best of your ability in exchange for the payment of my funds.
Yeah, that's a malpractice case.
Not when the damages are simply limited to the recoupment of attorney fees that are paid.
Yeah, recoupment is not an independent claim. We've been through that in this case.
Correct, but you can...
If it's a breach of contract, what was the promise that wasn't kept?
The promise was to represent Midwest Transit, and Sanborn Phoenix took actions directly detrimental to...
There's no doubt that it represented Midwest Transit.
And at the same...
Your theory is that it also represented something else, and that may or may not have been a problem under the ethical rules, but there's no doubt that it represented Midwest Transit as contracted. So again, what was the contractual promise that was not kept?
It took action completely detrimental to Midwest Transit.
To its client.
To its client.
Correct.
Yeah, well, that sounds like legal malpractice.
Sounds like malpractice, all right.
But we did not. This is a very simple case of simple recoupment of...
Well, legal malpractice can be very simple. If the lawyer is disloyal, has conflict of interest, and so on, as you're arguing.
Well, the state of Illinois does allow recoupment of attorney fees as a cause of action.
Recoupment as a cause of action? No, this is what getting back to our... That's the remedy. Recoupment is a remedy, a restitution. It's an alternative to damages.
Correct.
But you need a cause of action. You need a claim. You need a violation of a legal right. And you have a legal right to, loyal service of your lawyer. And if a breach of that, a violation of that legal right, that's called legal malpractice.
It doesn't have to be just that.
I don't understand. If a state establishes rules governing legal malpractice, then you can't avoid those rules by saying, well, it's a malpractice case, but it doesn't have to be. It can be relabeled as breach of contract.
But the point that's crucial here is the plaintiff chose the cause. That's their choice, to choose the cause of action. They specifically...
But you can't choose labels. You can't do labels. I mean, suppose you have medical malpractice in a state in which a medical malpractice claim has to be submitted to a panel of doctors before you can file a suit. Well, you can't say, well, I didn't have to do that because my complaint is simply a breach of contract. The doctor promised to cut off my left leg, he cut off my right leg, that's a breach of contract. You can't do that. You can't escape the special rules for malpractice by relabeling malpractice as some other kind of tort.
I believe if all you were requesting was that the return of fees.
No, that's the remedy. And if you sue for malpractice, you can get restitution. That's a remedy for malpractice, of course. You paid your lawyer, he violated his duty to you, now you want your fees back.
And a lot more.
Maybe you didn't suffer any damages, but you weren't served right and want your fees back.
There are many more elements to establish in a legal malpractice case other than simply that the attorney took money that didn't belong to him. Any other questions?
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Shannon. Mr. Cox?
May it please the court, my name is Courtney Cox. I represent the defendant in this case. In this case, the district court's decisions should be affirmed. In this case, there was a failure of proof, not a failure of pleading. In this case, they pled a set of facts, which is required. We proceeded for 18 months under the idea that there was a cause of action or complaint for legal malpractice. And then, 1 week before trial...
Before we get into this, I do want to ask you the jurisdictional question. Have you any knowledge of what the rules are in Missouri?
I have none of the versions. I do not.
Are the partners in the firm all Missourians?
I do not know. I apologize, and I will say it's not part of the record. The record is devoid of any information about that.
We obviously need supplemental briefing, not only on the legal attributes, but with respect to the factual attributes. And both parties should be aware of the opportunity to supplement the pleadings, even on appeal, under 28 U.S.C. 1653, to show jurisdiction. If it turns out, for example, that all of the members of the firm are citizens of Missouri, you could avoid this whole question by supplementing the pleadings under 1653 to show that.
And I cannot answer the court's question today.
It's not an issue.
In this case, we operated for 18 months believing that it was a legal malpractice claim until 1 week before the scheduled trial, when the defendant said that they wanted to add two counts for legal malpractice, professional negligence. And at that time, for the first time, we understood that the first count, whatever it was, they were now saying it was not for legal malpractice. So we responded by saying, well, if it's not for legal malpractice, there is no cause of action, because what they're asking for is a remedy without a cause of action. So the court said, all right,
Now, Ms. Shanahan says, well, it's breach of contract, and as long as you're just seeking your fees back, you can, not tort damages, you can just call it breach of contract. Has that come up before in this case?
And no, Your Honor, it came up for the first time on appeal. Below, the court asked
It isn't your brief on appeal? I didn't pick it up. I thought it just came up in the argument, but maybe it was...
It did come up in the argument, and it came up for the first time on appeal. In other words, the plaintiff never, in the court below, asserted this was a claim for breach of contract. They didn't try the case as a breach of contract claim. They didn't present that argument to the court below. They presented it for the first time to this court, and the facts that they have alleged do not even support a breach of contract claim. They do not make those allegations. But the court correctly found that the allegations, although not beautifully pled, do support a legal malpractice claim. That's what they wanted to do, was try it as a legal malpractice claim by adding those counts. The court said, fine, I'm not going to add those counts, but I'm going to give you the relief in the form of, we'll try it as a legal malpractice claim. And that's how it was tried. And when you look at how they tried the case, they tried it as a legal malpractice claim, bringing up matters about professional rules and so on. And the court listened to all the evidence and concluded, among other things, that they had not proven that there was no benefit. They had not proven there was a breach of their duty, that there was negligence. In other words, they failed to prove their case. And that is a finding of the court that is not contested, not appealed. So we ask the court to affirm the finding of the court below. And if the court would like additional briefing on those other issues, well, we'd be happy to do that as well.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cox. Ms. Shanahan?
About
10 days. Do you have something further?
Just very briefly, Your Honor. Our argument as to this being contract case is brief.
No, it isn't. I saw it.
The reason that it was not raised in the lower court is we didn't get a chance to, because the judge said, this is legal malpractice. They didn't get a chance to go any further. Finally, I think I just want to note that in the district court noted this case could fall under several different legal theories. One of them that he specifically stated was that it could be a breach of contract case.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both parties, and we'd like you to submit your jurisdictional memoranda responding to questions that the court has asked within 10 days. We'll send a written order this afternoon confirming that. Next case for argument is Walton versus Briley. Mr.